This is the Citizens Council Forum, the American viewpoint with a Southern accent, presented by the Citizens Councils of America on behalf of affiliated state organizations throughout the South. The Citizens' Councils are dedicated to states' rights and racial integrity, to individual liberty, and to race relations based on common sense, not on the power politics of left-wing pressure groups. The Citizens' Councils are primarily a means of mobilizing public opinion. Informed people will not surrender their freedom. Now, from Washington, here is your host for Citizens' Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. We're very happy to have as our guest today Senator Sam J. Ervin, Jr., Democrat from North Carolina. Senator Ervin is a lawyer, a veteran of World War I, a distinguished jurist having served on the North Carolina Superior Court, and as an Associate Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court before coming to Congress, served in the House one term and was elected to the Senate in 1954. Senator Ervin is a member of the Armed Services Committee, Government Operations Committee, and member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he is chairman of the Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights. Senator Ervin, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Well, Dick, it's a great pleasure to be back with you on the program. I've enjoyed previous appearances with you very much.
During the current session of Congress, you have assumed the chairmanship of the Constitutional Rights Subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee. I'd like to ask you a question about that to start things off. Let's get our terms straight. It seems that some people nowadays would have us believe that there are constitutional rights and then there are civil rights. Are the two any different or what?
I think constitutional rights are necessarily civil rights because and a civil right is a right which belongs to all of the members of the community and does not belong to certain individuals or certain groups. Everybody under the Constitution should have exactly the same constitutional rights and also, of course, since the term would imply cover civil rights, same civil rights.
Has there been a tendency of late, though, to seek special rights for special groups?
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about that, Dick. Most of our so-called civil rights bills of modern vintage all have that in view.
And why has this come about?
Well, I think that it has come about by the recognition among persons who seek public offices that they might reap some political hay by trying to make it appear that they're making certain groups of people special favorites of the laws. And, of course, that attitude is absolutely repugnant to our basic legal foundation, which contemplates that all laws shall apply alike to all men in like circumstances.
But there are efforts currently being made which, as you say, would set up certain people, members of certain groups, as special favorites of the law.
Yes, and all in the face of a declaration made to the Supreme Court of the United States back in 1883. That's a long time ago. In which the court said that it seems that when a man has been released from slavery and by the aid of beneficent legislation has been enabled to shake off the concomitants of that state, there ought to come a time in his development when he ceases to be a special favorite of the laws and takes the rank of an ordinary citizen and has his legal rights adjudicated by the same laws by which all other men's legal rights are adjudicated. And all of these modern civil rights bills fly in the absolute face of that declaration of the Supreme Court in that they select certain groups and attempt to make them special favorites of the laws and to exempt them from having their rights established by the same laws by which all other rights of all other men are established.
Well, now, Senator Ervin, isn't it true that if you take one group and give them a certain set of special privileges, that in effect all other people who are not members of that group are being denied rights?
Oh, yes. That's right, and that's the theory is of this. Of those who advocate these programs is that these programs cannot be consummated by the laws that apply to all Americans, but on the contrary, they need special laws, and that's abhorrent to the very idea that all men shall stand equal before the law.
What has been the trend in the judiciary insofar as making special groups special favorites?
Well, judiciary, I hate to say, especially the Supreme Court of the United States, has gone along with this theory, apparently. For example, I was very much struck with the fact that the civil rights which apply to some people did not prevail according to the decision of the Supreme Court in the case of the registrars in Louisiana. I could not see how the majority decision in that case could be reconciled with what the court had to say in the Watkins case. Of course, mm-hmm. Watkins was a man who had been supposed to have some subversive affiliations, and maybe that gave him some special kind of a constitutional right above that which law-abiding Americans or loyal Americans have.
Well, now, actually, the propagandists have been busy in this field of so-called civil rights, and there's been a development that is rather puzzling to me, and that is whenever integration of the races is involved and whenever a Southern white person objects to integration, why, the propagandists would have you believe that the white people are disabusing the so-called law of the land. But on the other hand, you can turn right around and have a group of colored people demonstrating and violating property rights by sit-in demonstrations, and this same violation of the law then becomes a peaceful demonstration for first-class citizenship.
It's a rather queer thing that anyone would advocate the violation of any law by any group of people, because everyone, of course, has a right to petition for a redress of grievances, and would accord to any American or any group of Americans a right to appeal to legislative bodies to change the law. But for the life of me, I cannot distinguish between taking the law into one's own hand in any instance and those of the demonstrations to which you have alluded, because they are clearly in violation of property rights and are clearly in violation of criminal statutes.
We were speaking of a case in the realm of subversive activities a moment or two ago. There is a recent decision of the United States Supreme Court in the cases of two people named Braden and Wilkinson. Does this present any encouraging trend to you? Would you describe the case a little bit for us and tell us whether it presents an encouraging trend?
Well, these cases involve the right of the Un-American Activities Committee, or I should say the legal power of the Un-American Activities Committee, to inquire into communist activities and communist affiliations of the two defendants. And the majority of the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 decision, upheld the right of the Un-American Activities Committee to make these inquiries. And that is a very healthful sign, because it is certainly a far cry, as I see it, from that decision to the decisions that came up in the New Hampshire case, where a split court wrote of conflicting opinions which seemed to throw a great deal of doubt on the law in this field.
Do you believe that this indicates that there is a growing realization that these powers are necessary?
Yes, I think it is a realization on the part of the court that there is a communist threat to the overthrow of freedom, and that it's an appropriate action for a congressional committee to investigate the extent of this threat with a view to determining whether legislation is needed to cope with it.
From the correspondence that you maintain and the people with whom you have talked in all parts of the country, Senator Ervin, have you come to any conclusions as to whether attorneys and private citizens all over the country are waking up to some of the dangers that our judicial structure is leading us to?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that, because for a long time, the American Bar Association Journal, which is the official organ of the American Bar Association, an organization composed of some 80 or 90,000 American lawyers, would not print any article which was critical of any decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. But during the past several years now, the American Bar Association Journal has carried a number of illuminating articles pointing out the dangers of our present situation, in which the courts have, especially Supreme Court of the United States, has had a tendency to substitute the personal notions of some of its members for law.
there has been some talk lately of the enactment of some possible legislation requiring certain experience standards before a man is eligible for appointment to the Supreme Court. Would you favor such legislation, Senator?
I'm not certain that I am able to convince myself of the constitutionality of it, because the Constitution itself lays down no qualifications for members of the Supreme Court. But if we go back to the Federalists, we'd see that the reason that the Constitution places no limitation on the Supreme Court was because Alexander Hamilton stated that the only men who would ever be appointed to membership on the Supreme Court would be men who would recognize the precedents and be bound by the precedents. He said the only men that would ever be considered for membership on that court would be men who, by long and laborious labor in the legal field, would be familiar with the precedents and would have the habit of conforming to those precedents. And that was true for the greatest period of our history. Our men were appointed to the Supreme Court because of substantial achievements as judges, or because they had substantial achievements as lawyers. But it was astounding to realize that the court which handed down the decision in the school desegregation cases was composed of 9 judges, only one of whom had ever served a single second as a judge of an appellate court or a court of general jurisdiction prior to his appointment to the court. In other words, eight of the 9 judges were totally without judicial experience, and a lot of them had not devoted their major efforts to the practice of law, and therefore they didn't fit the description of Alexander Hamilton as being men who, by long and laborious work and administration of justice, had acquired a knowledge of the precedents and an ability to exercise judicial self-restraint.
So, leaving the question of legislation aside, you would then urge that experienced men be selected for such vacancies?
Well, I don't think that any president ought to ever appoint a man to the Supreme Court of the United States unless that man has devoted the major efforts of his life to the administration of justice, either as a judge of an appellate court or a judge of a court of general jurisdiction, or who has been a practicing lawyer who has devoted his major energies to the practice of law. Because only people of this type acquire any understanding of the necessity of having stability in law and the necessity of having a law which can be reasonably ascertained by resort to judicial opinions.
Senator Ervin, our time has gone by very quickly. I'd like to thank you once again for being with us.
Thank you, Dick. It's been a great pleasure and privilege to be with you again.
Our guest on today's edition of Citizens Council Forum has been Senator Sam Ervin, Jr., Democrat from North Carolina. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
This forum has been presented by the Citizens Councils of America. We Americans are threatened with the loss of many of our hard-won freedoms, the historic right of each sovereign state to govern itself without interference from political courts, the right of the individual to choose his own associates without the prodding of federal bayonets, and the right of each citizen to make up his own mind in the American way, free from alien propaganda. Each of us has a job to do. Your support is needed. For information, write Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We will be happy to send you, without obligation, copies of our literature showing how you can help. Just write Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. The South is organizing. Join with those who stand publicly, fearlessly, and determined that these freedoms will be maintained.